Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is your Marvel Chronology episode for today, and we're continuing with the Thanos reading order. We've now moved into the much more modern time. Last time we talked about the death of Captain Marvel, which was 1982 that came out. But again, if you listen to that, I've said it many times, it's debatable whether it's really an appearance of Thanos. I mean, certainly it's not a Thanos story. It's a Captain Marvel story. But Thanos does show up. But whether or not it's a true appearance or it's just a figment of Captain Marvel's imagination or his life flashing before his eyes as he lives his final moments is, as I said, up for debate. So if you take that out and you look at the previous last appearance of Thanos in 79, and then you're talking all the way in the Silver Surfer issue, Silver Surfer number 34 that we're going to talk about from 1990, Thanos was gone for a really long time, a decade. And I've talked about it at length on previous Thanos reading orders, how it's almost unfathomable being as popular as Thanos is now. And, you know, the way comic companies never let a character lie fallow that long, that Thanos was off the table for that long. But again, his popularity wasn't anywhere near what it is now. He wasn't as well known. And, you know, he was a Jim Starlin creation. And Starlin was the one that wanted to be the one to tell the Thanos stories. And it didn't really seem like any other creator really cared about Thanos that much, at least until the Infinity Gauntlet, when obviously Thanos sort of his profile was raised as a character. And then, you know, a lot of people had story ideas for him. So this is the beginning of that. This starts the journey of Thanos to eventually obtaining the Infinity Gauntlet, which, you know, is how a lot of people know him when you start talking about the MCU, the movies and such. So it all starts here with Silver Surfer number 34. So this is written by Starlin. This is Starlin coming back to Marvel to start working toward that idea of the Infinity Gauntlet. He doesn't handle the art, though. The art is by Ron Lim. It says art, but I guess pencils is really what they mean. Because you have Tom Christopher on inks, you have Ken Bruzanak on letters, and Tom Vincent on colors. So up until this point, from issue 1 to 33 of Silver Surfer, he's really being put through his paces just to kind of talk about where he is in terms of his storyline or his timeline when we meet up with him here in issue 34. You know, ever since the Silver Surfer had turned against Galactus, you know, he was the Herald of Galactus, which means he went out to basically find suitable planets for Galactus to consume. And he always tried to find planets without sentient life, so that Thanos could consume as he needed to, but he wasn't harming anyone. And, you know, Norrin Rad, the Silver Surfer's, you know, civilian persona, I guess you'd call it, his non-powered persona from the planet Zen-La, he basically gave himself, he sacrificed himself for his planet. You know, Galactus showed up to consume Zen-La, and Norrin Rad offered his services, hey, let me be your herald, let me go out and find planets for you, and in return you will spare Zen-La. And so he's been doing it for a long time, and then obviously came to Earth. That's where we first saw Silver Surfer and Galactus in the pages of Fantastic Four, and the Fantastic Four, and specifically Sue Storm, were able to appeal to that humanity of Silver Surfer, which he had over the years and years and years had kind of let slip away due to isolation and depression and things like that. But he rediscovered that and turned against Thanos and helped turned against Galactus, I should say, and helped the Fantastic Four prevent the Earth from being consumed by Galactus. And in return, Galactus imprisoned Silver Surfer on Earth and said, yeah, you love these Earthlings so much, you're going to be stuck here. So Galactus found a way to keep the Silver Surfer from leaving there. Here's a being who is, you know, destined and created to soar the spaceways on his silvery board. And now he's trapped on Earth. You know, it's a pretty fitting punishment that Galactus had had given him. So, you know, throughout the years, Silver Surfer, in a way, he's like Thanos. You know, nobody wanted to write Thanos but Jim Starlin. Jim Starlin didn't want anybody to write Thanos but him. Stan Lee felt the same way about Silver Surfer. He didn't really like other people messing with Silver Surfer for a long time. So Silver Surfer had a short-lived series that was written by Stan Lee. And he showed up here and there over the years, but he didn't have his own series for a long time. It was kind of curious, actually, being that he was a somewhat popular character. And then they finally brought him back in 80, I think it was 87, late 87. They needed to get him off of Earth, right? Like, he'd been stuck on Earth, and you can't really tell Silver Surfer stories if he's stuck on Earth. He had been stuck ever since Galactus originally imprisoned him there. So in the first issue, and again, this is spoilers if you ever plan on reading this classic Silver Surfer series and don't want it spoiled for you, skip ahead about 30 seconds. But basically what they discovered was that it wasn't the Silver Surfer himself that was trapped on Earth, but actually his board. So whenever he would try to leave Earth, you know, he would do this various times over the year. He would store up all his energy and then try to burst through the barrier that Galactus had created by soaring as fast as he could on his surfboard. And he would always, you know, hit the barrier that Galactus had erected, and, you know, he wouldn't make it. And they'd go to conserving energy again for years and years and try again. So in the first issue of this series of Silver Surfer, he actually says, you know what, let me try it without my board. I'm simplifying here, but let me try it without my surfboard. Sure enough, he gets out, transforms his surfboard into energy, pulls it through the barrier, and he's free. And so from issue 1 to 33, or 2 to 33, if you want to think about it like that, he's just flying around in space and having cosmic adventures. And it's a really good series, actually. And he doesn't really get much in the way of rest. He just bounces from one adventure to another, meeting all these different cosmic entities, you know, people that you've heard of before, Ego, the Living Planet, Eon, In-Betweener, Living Tribunal, just all these, you know, cosmic entities in Marvel. The Silver Surfer series was a way for Marvel to tell stories with them again, because you know how it is in publishing. If you don't use a character for a certain period of time, you lose some of the rights to that character. So having a Silver Surfer series at this time allowed them to tell stories with all these different characters. And so that's what the first 33 issues were about. And as I said, Silver Surfer was really jumping from one adventure to another without much chance to rest. So in issue 34, it starts off and we're told that we don't know why the Silver Surfer has chosen to come to this desolate planet, and he's really too tired to care. But maybe here he can retreat from all the chaos and all the just nonstop events that have been happening in his life recently. So many problems, so many battles, and it's been so trying for him. And maybe even cosmic heroes need a little time for rest. Maybe, and then we get the little dot, 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 and then it gets to the title, even demigods must dream, is what the story is. So Silver Surfer has come to what we're told is a lifeless world. Doesn't have a name. There's nobody there. It's just sand dunes and basically barren landscape for as far as the eye can see. But Silver Surfer actually finds it tranquil, right? He's been through so much lately that having a place where there's nothing is actually restful for him. So he lands his surfboard, he lays down, and his exhaustion is so total that it doesn't even occur to him as he drifts off to sleep that it's actually been years since the last time that he slept. So while he sleeps, we see this giant skull-shaped monolith show up. I mean, it dwarfs him in size, and the appearance of it wakes him, supposedly, and he stands up saying, "What madness is this?" And as he walks into the monolith, into the mouth of this skull, he says, "Where did this strange, ominous structure come from? What purpose could such an evil-looking dwelling have? You know, the architecture smacks of Mephisto's Hades, but I don't sense that Mephisto has a hand in this," because again, Mephisto is very much a nemesis, one of the Surfer's rogues galleries. He's more a Silver Surfer villain than anybody else, although clearly he shows up and has fought, you know, the Hulk and Doctor Strange and Spider-Man and pretty much everybody at this point, Ghost Rider. He doesn't sense that Mephisto has anything to do with this, but he walks in and he thinks there's something familiar about this dark place. It's not deja vu. It's a more primal feeling than that. I'm feeling it in my very core. It's as basic as life and death. And as he says that, he sees a couple of people go walking by carrying a chest, and they don't appear to be able to perceive the Silver Surfer. They're talking to each other. Hurry up. She's in a terrible mood. The mistress wants this one immediately. Never seen her in such a state since her last encounter with the Silver Surfer, the in-betweener, rather, which we're told by the editor Craig that happened in Silver Surfer 17, and that catches the Surfer's attention. The in-betweener, like who did I encounter when I encountered the in-betweener? But anyway, these two minions, whoever they are, they go on. They're continuing their conversation amongst themselves. Hate to guess what she's even planning. Well, it's probably something awesome. And Surfer's like, man, they walked right by me. They didn't even notice me. They're very odd creatures. I didn't do anything to hide myself from them, and it doesn't seem like they're blind, and their lack of reaction to my presence doesn't make any sense. Everything about this place feels unnatural. Everything about this place is nonsensical. So what? And then all of a sudden it kind of dawns on him. He's like, oh, of course, I'm dreaming. That's what it is. And he turns around, he looks back out the mouth of this skull monolith structure, and he sees himself out there still leaning against the surfboard, still asleep. He's like, man, it's been so long since I last dreamt. I forgot what it was even like. Why don't I just go with this and see where it leads? You know, why not? Perhaps this is something I've been needing without even realizing it. And then the dialogue exposition boxes reappear. It says dreams. It's said that dreams are muddled messages from the subconscious, and it lets us access things that would be accessible in any other way. And how long can an explorer of the heavens go without basically examining themselves, right? What uncharted depths are there if you go years and years without dreaming? So the Surfer wonders if that's what this trek is, that's what this dream journey is. It's his own psyche telling him things that he needs to know. So with a bit of a shudder, he thinks about how long it's been since he's thought about the human side of himself and the fact that there is a human underneath that silvery skin. And so he follows these two. They reach a chamber, and one of the minions says to the other, she says, open the casket now. And Surfer's thinking she, and as he turns, he sees this giant pillar of skulls, and atop the pillar of skulls is a throne, and atop that throne is death. And Surfer thinks, it's death. I stand within the hall of death. I should have known. And meanwhile, the minions are opening the chest, and they say, stand back. You don't want to get too close to this one. He's mean and hungry. And we see this this disembodied, gaseous-looking head sort of float up from the casket. Now, it's not like this return of Thanos is a secret. They could have played it that way, because you'll see Thanos doesn't actually show up in terms of we're 100% sure it's him until we get to the very last page of this issue. But on the front cover, we're told, I didn't talk about the front cover, the front cover is a giant picture of Thanos in the background, and the Silver Surfer flying on a surfboard in front, and it says the return of Thanos. So when you look at this disembodied gaseous head that floats up out of this casket that these minions open, you can see how it's sort of this vague Thanos-like shape in his head. It looks like Thanos's head, if you were to know that. If they hadn't put Thanos on the cover, I don't know that you immediately jump and think it's Thanos. When knowing that, you can see the resemblance. You can see the eyes. You can see how, you know, on the corner of his eyes, he has the little shapes that kind of curve up in a little spike. You can see the lines on the chin and whatnot. But without that information, maybe you know it's Thanos, maybe you don't. But as that spirit of Thanos rises up from this casket, Surfer says, something long dead and very malignant. So malignant, never have I sensed such depths of depravity. Can this really be a dream? I'm experiencing it so intensely, and something as base as this apparition, could it reside within me that I would dream of it? Something this evil? Meanwhile, the disembodied head says, how may this humble soul serve his ebon mistress? Command and I shall obey. And one of the minions speaks for death. She doesn't speak herself. And he says, in life, you honored our monarch as no other. She has need of your services again. Recently, Mistress Death senses an imbalance, and she fears that all of existence is going to be endangered if this imbalance goes unchecked. And so she's calling upon your unique talents to remedy the situation. And so Service Surfer's looking on, trying to figure out what's going on. And Thanos replies, even in death, I live to serve the Black Queen. Let the heavens run red with blood. Planets shall crumble. Stars will go nova. Black holes will be all that remains. I'll shatter galaxies. So swears her greatest slave, the once again and all powerful. And before he can announce his name, as all despots like to do, speaking in the third person, the other minion calls out and says, hold, this braggart's made all these promises before and he's failed. That's why he's dead. And the other says, well, that was before he stepped to this side of the veil. The fact that he's died has raised him to a new plateau. So apparently, in death, Thanos is even more more powerful. And the first minion responds, yeah, but most of those heroes that opposed him are still on this side of the veil. They're still on the side of the living. So how can he triumph over all of them? And the first minion responds, well, he won't have to, because the mistress has gazed into the mist and she's seen the future, and she knows that there's only one obstacle to the success of this creature. And that obstacle is the cosmic being known as the Silver Surfer. And he turns and points to the surfer who's standing there. And he's like, wait, now they can see me? And Thanos, the head still floating there in gaseous form, says, this gleaming gnat is my adversary. So it's so interesting, because certainly when I think of Silver Surfer now, being a cosmic character, I definitely associate him with Jim Starlin. But the whole thing is, we've done all the Thanos reading and appearances up until now, and the Surfer and Thanos never actually crossed paths. So much of why I associate Silver Surfer and Thanos together comes from this epic story that I read off the rack as it was coming out. And at that point, when I was reading this, when it was coming out, I hadn't gone back and read all those earlier Thanos appearances. It was this story, this introduction to Thanos. I mean, I had read the Death of Captain Marvel, and I had read the Avengers Annual and the Marvel 2-in-1 Annual, and I kind of gleaned who Thanos was from those three stories. But I hadn't gone back and actually read the Captain Marvel stuff or the Warlock stuff. And, the Silver Surfer is just such a cosmic character, and Thanos is such a cosmic character, and Jim Starlin is the master of Marvel cosmic, and so you just would automatically make that connection. Well, of course they've met, but they hadn't. They hadn't met, they hadn't fought, they hadn't battled until this. And so it's a testament to this story and how important this story is with Thanos' resurrection and, his re-rise, I guess you'd say, to power, of just how interlinked, at least in my mind, the Thanos and Silver Surfer are. I guess not so much in the MCU, because, Silver Surfer from Fantastic Four 2 didn't go so great. The Fantastic Four 2 movie, and obviously he wasn't in the MCU. But here, they're about to become joined at the hip, as it were. So yeah, Thanos, he says, gleaming gnat, my adversary, he's nothing, let him taste my power. And he somehow, even though he's this disembodied gaseous head, he still can fire his eye beams, and he fires them, and Silver Surfer goes flying. I mean, flying, almost all the way, he knocks him almost all the way back out the entrance of this giant skull. So out of the throne room, bouncing down the hallway, almost out of the structure completely. And Surfer's saying, man, I've never felt such power. I've never felt such pain. And he's like, wait, pain? Can you feel pain in a dream? I never have before. It's like, man, I got to get out of here. Let me walk out of the structure, get outside, catch my breath, clear my head. Something's wrong here. And when he walks outside, he's like, what's going on? This can't be. There's people out here. People, aliens, hundreds and thousands of them for as far as the eye can see. Where did they come from? What are they doing here? And they're all starting to crowd in on him. And he says, and a better question might be, why are they all staring at me? So he calls for his board and he flies up above them because he thinks this insanity grows ever deeper. This multitude seems to be entranced by the sight of that strange volcano, if that's what it truly is. And this doesn't feel so much like a dream, but it also doesn't appear to be really happening. You know, this volcano looks man-made, and wait, there's somebody on the crater, on the crater edge. It's a woman. She's holding an infant. And as the Silver Surfer watches, she hurls this infant into the volcano. So the Surfer screams out, no, and he flies in and he manages to grab the child just, you know, a split second before it falls into the volcano and flies back out. And he's very happy with himself, saying, unbelievable, the babe lives. Let's get away from this hellish place and these maniacs, my little one. Don't cry. I won't return you to those lunatics. And as he's holding the baby in his arms and looking at it, it starts to transform into this hideous monster and grow and attack him. And he ends up having to use his power to keep it from smothering and suffocating him, and uses all the strength he can muster to fire up a blast of cosmic energy. And then he falls from the sky. And again, we're sort of told that we're sort of shown that this is all just a dream, because when he kind of wakes up, if you will, or in his mind, you know, he's fallen from the sky after destroying this monster, and he picks himself off the ground. He looks around and he says, the people, the hall of death, everything is gone. Were they ever really truly here? And he's thinking, was my original perception correct? Was it all just a dream? Maybe it was nothing but a nightmare. You know, it was so strange and frightening, and you know, all these people. Because again, he still doesn't know who Thanos is at this time. Still has never met him, has not heard from him. He's thinking, man, so much has happened to me since I escaped Earth, and I've had no time to examine or think about my feelings or my freedom. But man, it's time to face the facts. There is a human being underneath this silvery shell, and it is a human being who may be suffering from some sort of delayed stress syndrome, and these might be hidden messages from my subconscious. I should explore what they mean and try to, you know, glean any truth I can from it. And the question remains, what was that dream all about? Like, what did it mean? And then a voice off panel says, perhaps it was a premonition. And Silver Surfer turns and he says, you were the disembodied spirit in my dream. Because as he turns, he sees Thanos there sitting on this floating chair. Kind of looks like the Mobius chair a little bit. And Thanos says, yes, how perceptive of you to notice. And Surfer, you know, gets a chance to ask his question, who are you? And Thanos replies, the name is Thanos. And it says to be continued next issue. So it's been a really long time since I've read these. I don't remember if we get an explanation for the dream or not. Because as I was reading it, I was trying to remember. Like, so are the, when the Surfer walks out and he sees all these people, all these aliens, are they the dead that Thanos has created over time? Is that who he's meeting? What's the significance of the baby being thrown in the volcano that then turns into a monster? Because I was trying, again, it's been so, I haven't read this stuff since, I mean, I've read it once since it came out. It hasn't been, you know, since 1990 that this came out that I've read it, but it's probably been since the mid 90s after the first Infinity Gauntlet event, the Infinity Gauntlet miniseries, where I think once that series was done, I went back and kind of reread all the Silver Surfer, all the Thanos quests all the way through, to the end of the miniseries and all the tie-ins, just to read it as one big story. But it's been 20 plus years since I read it, so I'm not necessarily going to speculate. I originally was thinking about it, well, maybe I'll speculate on who these people were. Are they the dead of Thanos? Thanos himself says maybe it's a premonition, so maybe it's the people he is going to kill when he snaps his fingers, once he has the Infinity Gauntlet and wipes out half the living beings in the galaxy, or is it something else? I just don't remember. So I could speculate on it here, but I think I'm going to wait and see if there's more information in the next issue for next episode, and then maybe I'll come back and revisit this. What the scene is, the woman throwing the baby into the volcano. Man, I can't even venture to guess. I just don't remember. So I apologize. Maybe I should have went ahead and read the next issue so I could talk about this, but again, it's not the end of the world, certainly. And you know, when you're reading this, you didn't really know either. You know, when I read it the first time, I'm like, huh. But this was really significant because it was the return of Thanos, right? Like when Starlin killed him in Marvel 2-in-1 annual number 2, I mean, I don't think at that time he had plans, you know, to bring Thanos back. At that point, he was done. He had told the story of Thanos. And really, him being on Captain Marvel, him being on Warlock, Jim Starlin as a creator, it was the Thanos story, you know, that he originally had planned for Iron Man, didn't necessarily work there. But then, you know, as fate would have it, serendipitously, he ends up on Captain Marvel, which is a, you know, very cosmic book. So is Adam Warlock, and it suits the story he wants to tell. So in the ensuing years, like I said, Thanos had been off the table for over a decade, comes up with this idea, hey, let me flesh out even further on Thanos. Because if you remember, in that last story, that two-part story that was in the two annuals, it's those Infinity Stones are mentioned, Infinity Gems are mentioned. And so now this is the chance for Starlin to come back and say, hey, I'm going to bring Thanos back from the dead. It's comics. He doesn't have to stay dead. Certainly he doesn't have to stay dead because he worships death itself. He has a relationship with her. So why wouldn't he be able to come back on some level? And so this is significant that Thanos is back, right? And he's going to start to pull at the strings, you know? He's going to start to be the puppet master and manipulate events and try to gain power any way he can. And, you know, from this time, from 1990, when Thanos returns, he's been a pretty constant character and figure in Marvel comics and in their universe and their stories. So this is a very significant comic. You would almost think that it would be almost as significant as Iron Man 55, but yet, even though this book is in demand, it's nowhere near the price that Iron Man 55 is. Obviously, you know, collectors and the secondary market determines that value, but I am surprised that more people don't see this as a more key issue than it is. Because really, as I was saying, Thanos and Silver Surfer, in my mind, are so inextricably linked. And it's all because of this story. It's all because of the story that Starlin weaves here. And I think, you know, when you talk about Thanos and Silver Surfer, they're both cosmic characters. And as I've said many times, nobody does cosmic better than Jim Starlin in the Marvel Universe. So really great return here. We don't get a whole lot of explanation, but we are setting the stage for what comes next. So that's going to do it for this episode. As always, I want to thank everybody for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.